Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
I would like the private sector working with doctors, nurses, and hospitals and the political arena to come together and say, we need a uniquely American solution.
Senator Hillary Clinton from her Friday night debate against John Spencer, as heard here on WNYC. And with that, we continue our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. Issue 21 this morning is universal health care possible in America. We will hear from Paul Krugman and two other guests in just a minute. But first, I want to take our first minute to lay out the special challenge, special opportunity for WNYC to get a $60,000 contribution from Paul Newman's Newman's Own Foundation. He has challenged us, if you didn't hear it before the news, to raise $60,000 on this morning's program alone from you, our listeners. And if we succeed, he'll give us $60,000 of his own dollars. So please take advantage. Please help us take advantage of this special opportunity right now. If you have ever considered becoming a WNYC contributor or renewing your membership, there has never been a more opportune time than right now. Convert your pledge, whatever it is, into $60,000 for WNYC. Because here, again, is the catch. We have to make the whole thing. This is all or nothing. Paul Newman wants to see that we mean something to enough of you. You know that he gives a lot of money away through the Newman's Own Foundation. Some of the proceeds, much of the proceeds from Newman's Own salad dressing and popcorn and all of that. But he really wants to know that WNYC means enough to our community, to our listeners, to be worth his $60,000. That's a lot of money. So help us take advantage of this opportunity. Help show Paul Newman that WNYC does matter to you. Your donation now will turn into $60,000 of Newman's own money if we get a total of $60,000 from you and the other listeners. So pledge online. Help us do this at WNYC.org, our website, or call 1-888-376-WNYC. That's 1-888-376-9692. And folks, thank you. Thank you. 60,000 thank yous this morning. I guess 120,000 thank yous, because it's your 60,000 and Paul Newman's 60,000 if we make the challenge. So thanks a lot. Think of how much your contribution will mean to WNYC today. All right, we begin to ask, is universal health care possible in America? With one woman's story. She is Marissa Acacella Marchetto. She is the author of a new graphic novel called Cancer Vixen, published by Knopf. It is her story of having cancer, and it includes the fact that when she was diagnosed, she was uninsured. Marissa, welcome to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be here, and this is my number one favorite topic, the health insurance issue.
All right. Tell us a little bit about how you got diagnosed with cancer, what your insurance status was, and what that meant to you at that time.
Okay. Well, I was diagnosed 3 weeks before I was about to get married to a wonderful man, Silvano Marchetto, who owns Da Silvano Restaurant. And, you know, I was 43 at the time. I'd never been married, and when I was diagnosed, I had to tell him that not only did I have breast cancer, but I didn't have health insurance. I'm a cartoonist and a freelancer, and my insurance just stopped. And I tried to get it back, and I made all these phone calls. Nobody returned my calls. And you know what? Part of it is I did drop the ball. I was on deadline. You know, when you're a cartoonist, you need to keep working. So I just let life take over. But I didn't have insurance, and the fact is that 49% of women who are diagnosed with breast cancer have and don't have insurance have a greater risk of dying.
What did you do?
What I did was I paid for some things out of my own pocket. My parents helped me out. My husband, we did get married right on schedule 3 weeks after. He helped me out. The doctors at St. Vincent's were extremely helpful. I was treated at St. Vincent's Comprehensive Cancer Center, and they are amazing. And then I finally did get insurance right before I started chemotherapy. I was really, really lucky, but I will tell you this. I will never forget how lucky I am, and I have started the Cancer Vixen Fund. And just this last Friday, we did free mammograms. We sponsored free mammograms that I paid for women. Anybody who didn't have insurance was welcome to sign up, and that's something that I'm going to be doing every year.
You must have been lucky. How did you get insurance with that pre-existing condition?
I got it because my husband's premiums went way up, right through the roof, and I got it because we were married and I went on his insurance plan. I mean, I know how lucky I am, and I was also lucky that I caught it early, and early detection saves lives, as Evelyn Lauder always says, and that's another thing. I do work for the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, and the research budget was cut by 6% in 2006 at a time when our population has gone up to 300 million people. That means more people will be getting cancer, and there will be less money to fund the research to cure it.
So based on your experience, is there mm-hmm. a kind of health insurance system you'd like to see in this country?
I couldn't agree more with Hillary Clinton. She is absolutely right. We do need universal health care. I've been interviewed by foreign journalists, and all they say is we are so lucky we don't live in the United States where they can't cover their people. I mean, it's amazing. This is the United States of America. It's not a third world country.
But as we will hear from Paul Krugman and our other guest, mm-hmm. there's universal health insurance and there's universal health insurance. There's Canada's universal health insurance where it's single payer, all provided by the government.
Right,
there's the kind that Hillary Clinton was outlining there in the debate, that in a way the kind that she proposed with her president husband in the 90s that uses the private system primarily, but with an overlay of regulation, very, very different. Have you thought this through?
I was in Canada actually just last week, and there were a lot of complaints about their health care. They say that they have to wait online, that they have to wait months for operations. You know, they have a lot of issues there, too, but at least they have insurance. I mean, it's an interesting debate, and I do think, you know, there's got to be something where people who need the medical attention get it when they need it. So
your book, Cancer Vixen, is a graphic novel, which for people who don't know what that means it's basically an extended book-length cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you deal with health insurance in cartoon form?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do. That was an issue that I was really happy to lay out there because it's so important. I've been flying all over doing book tour, and I got upgraded flying from Chicago to Boston to first class, and guess who I sat next to? Somebody from an insurance company in first class. And then I got upgraded from flying from Atlanta to New York. And once again, who do I sit next to? Somebody from an insurance company.
Huh. So they got an earful from you, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that you're doing this show because it needs to be talked about more and something needs to be done about it.
All right, Marissa Acocello Marchetto, her book published by Knopf is called Cancer Vixen, A True Story. She will be doing a reading, in case you're interested, next Monday, the 30th at 6:30 at St. Vincent's Comprehensive Cancer Center. That's 325 West 15th Street in Manhattan. That's going to be a talk, a book signing, and a presentation with her doctors. This is going to be a very unusual book event, I think, with the cartoon form book and your doctors and a book signing and snacks to boot, I gather.
Yep, they're going to be snacks from Da Silvano Restaurant. My husband's donating the food.
Thanks so much for coming on with us.
So
good luck
much.
To you. Paul Krugman next. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
Thank you. care in the state. Again, universal health care in this state if you are elected governor. Mr. Spitzer.
Yes.
Remember that moment from the Spitzer-Swasey debate in the summer? Dominic Carter from New York won, asking that lightning round question. If you're elected governor, can you bring universal health care to the state of New York? And Elliot Spitzer said yes. And since it looks like he's going to get elected, we'll soon find out how, I hope. And so we continue now with 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 21, is universal health care possible in America? With me now, New York Times columnist and economics professor Paul Krugman. This is one of his great interests. And Professor Krugman, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
So in a recent column, I saw that you compared health care spending and health care coverage in the U.S. to other wealthy nations. Can you start there?
Sure. I mean, we are unique among the advanced countries in not having effectively universal coverage. Basically, everybody else has managed to provide insurance to everyone. And you might think, well, that's because we don't spend enough, but the amazing thing is that we actually spend vastly more than any of the other than any other country on healthcare. We spend about 70 or 80% more than per person than countries like France, which has an excellent healthcare system and universal coverage. So the looking at the international comparisons, we're the odd man out. We're somehow managed to get the worst of both worlds with a large number of people who are not covered, and a lot of evidence that people do fail to get necessary medical care because they can't afford it. At the same time, we have, you know, we're spending hand and fist. So it's the sure answer from all of this is yes, of course, universal coverage is possible. Basically, everybody else manages to do it, and we have to figure out what's wrong with us.
I also saw a chart recently, not in your column, comparing life expectancies and health care spending in other countries as well. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, of course. People think it's an interesting thing. We have the illusion that we must have the highest life expectancy. We're actually close to the bottom among advanced countries. We're several years shorter. We have substantially higher infant mortality. We just, you know, basically, the U.S. does a little bit better than Costa Rica on the life expectancy charts, is the way to put it. We look more like a fairly wealthy third world country than we do like other advanced countries.
Now, we just heard one woman's story to get this segment going. A woman who was diagnosed, a young woman who was diagnosed with breast cancer just before she was scheduled to get married. She didn't have any health insurance. She eventually got onto her husband's plan after they got married, but first she had to go through this horrible period of time with breast cancer and without health insurance. But she also said, despite her strong feeling that we should have some kind of universal care in America, that she knows people from Canada who are not always so horribly happy with their health system as well, because they have to wait on lines even when things are seriously wrong with them, she said. So is it a Canadian-style universal health system that you think we should go to, or something else?
Well, there is a question of what I think might actually work best and what's likely to be feasible. The model, if you really want a system that appears to really, really work well, is the French system, which is sort of Canada plus. There is, in effect, a single payer, that is, the government provides health insurance to everybody, plus there's a substantial government role in the actual running of the system. It's not like the British system, where basically all doctors work for the government, but it's one in which the government actually takes a substantial role in the system. Canada is, you know, the Canadian, there are stories about people waiting in Canada. That's exaggerated, but it's real. But European systems don't have that problem. The continental European systems, the French and the Germans. The way I like to, people have myths in their minds about what foreign systems are like, and it's hard to dispel those. What I like to say is, look, you know, we actually have in the U.S. Versions of most of the things that we might consider as reforms. We have a single-payer healthcare system in the United States. It's called Medicare. Everybody over 65 in the U.S. is effectively covered by government insurance. That works. People, you know, it's not perfect. There are problems, but Medicare actually works, and people don't complain that it's terribly, it's a terrible system. We actually have a system of government-provided health care where the doctors are, in fact, government employees overseen by bureaucrats. It's the Veterans Administration. It's an excellent system. In a lot of ways, it's the best in the United States. It does have lines. It has waiting because it's underfunded, but it does incredible things given the amount of money it has. So, I would say that almost, I like the phrase just, Medicare for all. That's at least a starting point. That's a system that Americans know or are familiar with. It works. And it's really no good reason why we shouldn't have it for the population at large, not just for the elderly.
I want to play you a clip of one of our local candidates for office. And, of course, we're having this conversation with New York Times columnist Paul Krugman on universal health care in the context of our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. It was remarkable to me, and I wasn't expecting this answer when I asked Democratic congressional candidate Linda Stender, running in the 7th District in New Jersey against incumbent Republican Mike Ferguson recently, do you support a Canadian-style single-payer health system? Here's what she said.
We need to reform our health care system because it's broken and it's not working. And, yes, I support single-payer.
So government single-payer like Medicare for All,
yes,
or Canada. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I used that phrase that you just used, Medicare for All, and she was endorsing it. But you know, Dr. Krugman, that there are so few Democratic Party politicians, not Hillary Clinton, who had the debate Friday night calling for greater coverage, or hardly anyone else other than Linda Stender, calling for that kind of system. Why do you think it's so politically daunting for Democrats?
Because there's an enormous wall of special interests in the way. In a lot of ways, the story is that the United States missed its opportunity to have universal coverage in the, many, many years ago. We can argue, actually, that we missed it when Harry Truman didn't manage to get it through Congress. And in the meantime, we've built up an enormous private health insurance system, which is a very powerful, very organized lobby. We have the pharmaceutical companies who they get much higher prices for their drugs in the United States than they do elsewhere. That's why people basically smuggle the stuff in from Canada, because our system doesn't bargain with them. They have an enormously powerful lobby, and Democratic politicians are very afraid to take that on, especially after what happened to the Clintons in the early 90s. So I don't think there's a whole lot of intellectual conviction that we really need to, that there's something wrong with universal single-payer system, but there's a lot of justified political fear. And I appreciate that. I think, I've talked to healthcare economists, people who work on this, and I say, I read what you say and it all seems to point towards single-payer as the way to go. Why don't you actually say that in your articles or your books? And they say, well, because if you do that, then you're just ruled out of the political debate because everybody knows you can't actually get past the special interests.
Now, our next guest, Dr. Grazer, a physician who works with the conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute, will argue that capitalism is the best way to fix our health system, that it's already too regulated, and one of the problems is all this third-party payment, that is the insurance companies, plus Medicare and Medicaid, and that we then don't have an incentive to hold our own spending down on expensive and low odds, in many cases, healthcare technology, high expense, low benefit. Don't have an incentive to hold that down because we have all this third-party payment going on. So he says, let capitalism ration, I don't know if he uses that word, ration, because that would be the most most sensible and self-interested way. What do you say?
Well, there are two things to say about that. One is this is completely theory that flies in the face of all the evidence we have. The United States has the most privatized healthcare system in the world, and it also has by far the most expensive, the least efficient among the advanced countries. So there, if you're saying we should take what's different and apparently makes our system worse than that of other countries, and we should move further in that direction, that's pretty amazing. That's what I might call arrogance of theory. And if you actually look at it, the thing is, it's true that if you give people If you get rid of more of third-party payment, people might be less likely to do things like make spurious, unnecessary visits to the doctor's office, things that are really in the realm of individual choice. But that's not where the money is. The money is in the extremely expensive procedures for a small number of unlucky people. And what we're really paying for in health insurance is we're paying for coverage of that. It's not possible to make those things a matter of individual choice. You can't give people a significant financial stake in the costs of really major surgery or extremely expensive medical procedures, because nobody except a handful of millionaires could afford. The whole point is we need insurance so that if those things happen, we can pay for them. And also, people don't have the knowledge. I mean, I always say when people start talking about how we should have individual choice and that way people will control costs, are you going to be, you know, pounding the pavement, going up and down hospitals and saying, well, you know, Surgeon A says that if I do a $130,000 procedure, that's necessary, but Surgeon B says that I can get a almost as good for $121,000. I think I'm going to go with Surgeon B. You know, that's putting an absurd demand on people in terms of making decisions.
We just have about a minute left. We started with that clip of Elliot Spitzer from the debate saying if elected governor, which seems almost a certainty, he could bring universal health care on a state level to New York. Do you have any idea what he has in mind or what it would take?
My guess is, given the political realities, he'll go for something like what's being tried in Massachusetts, that you'll have a mandate that everyone has to have health insurance coupled with state subsidies to people who can't afford that. That doesn't solve a lot of the problems we have, but you know, it's better than nothing, and it could be a stepping stone towards a more rational system. So sure, I think he can do it. New York is a relatively rich state. The uninsured are by and large relatively young. They don't cost as much as the elderly. It's certainly within the realm of possibility. We can afford this, and let's see how well he does it.
New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And listeners, we'll get another view in just a couple of minutes.
You know, I have the scars to show for how hard this is, but I haven't given up.
Senator Hillary Clinton from her debate Friday night with John Spencer, not giving up on getting more Americans covered with universal health coverage. We continue now with 30 Issues in 30 Days. Issue 21, is universal health care possible in America? With me now, we will get another point of view from the one that we heard a few moments ago from New York Times columnist Paul Krugman. And how deeply divided are policy thinkers on the question of universal health care? Well, I actually got a press release emailed to me recently from the Manhattan Institute, the conservative think tank, the subject line of which is, "Expert says universal health care will hurt Americans." Now, that was too juicy to pass up. So joining us now to present another view after Paul Krugman is that expert. He is Dr. David Graetzer, a physician and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He has been called a natural-born economist by Milton Friedman. I assume that's a compliment. And is the author of a new book called The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare, published by Encounter Books. Dr. Graetzer, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
Let me start with the way the Manhattan Institute promoted you to us. I don't know if you own this language yourself. Do you believe that universal health care will hurt Americans?
It depends how you define universal health care. Depends on what the definition of is, Brian. I think that if we're talking about insuring more Americans, that's a good thing. If we're talking about, and this is really what most people advocate universal health care is talking about, expanding government to some type of a single-payer system, then yes, I actually do think it would affect Americans' health.
Tell us why.
Because I think that America has a pretty good healthcare system in a lot of ways. Look, I've written an entire book about some of the problems we have here, but I think opting for single payer, the magic bullet, would be an enormous mistake. Because if you look at Canada, you look at Europe, you discover when people are actually sick, the healthcare they receive is inferior to the health care received in the United States today. So I think looking to other countries like Canada for an answer would be a mistake. Again, I've written an entire book talking about the problems with the American system and what to do about it. So I'm not an apologist for what goes on in the United States, but careful what you wish for.
I want to play you a clip of Paul Krugman, who was here just a few minutes ago. I don't know if you got to hear that interview, but I asked him if it was the Canadian style per se that he's proposing for the United States, and here's part of his answer.
What I like to say is, look, you know, we actually have in the U.S. Versions of most of the things that we might consider as reforms. We have a single-payer healthcare system in the United States. It's called Medicare. Everybody over 65 in the U.S. is effectively covered by government insurance. That works. People, you know, it's not perfect. There are problems, but Medicare actually works, and people don't complain that it's terribly, it's a terrible system. We actually have a system of government-provided health care where the doctors are, in fact, government employees overseen by bureaucrats. It's the Veterans Administration. It's an excellent system. In a lot of ways, it's the best in the United States. It does have lines. It has waiting because it's underfunded, but it does incredible things given the amount of money it has. I like the phrase just, Medicare for all.
So, Dr. Graetzer, why not Medicare for all, which is in effect single payer, if Medicare appears to work so well and appears to Dr. Krugman and many others to work better than the private health insurance system in the United States?
Well, two points. Medicare has huge problems with it. For one thing, if we don't see huge changes within Medicare over the next 10 or so years, I think it'll bankrupt the federal treasury. Medicare also has huge inefficiencies, which is why three-quarters of people on Medicare have supplementary insurance that they purchase Medigap insurance, or they get some type of supplementary insurance from their employer, their past employer. So to hail Medicare as the pinnacle of American medicine is a little bit disingenuous. But my second point is, I think Medicare works relatively well for public coverage, certainly relatively well compared to the public coverage one would see in Canada or Britain, is because it piggybacks off the off the private sector, right? I mean, if you are enrolled in Medicare, you can see pretty much any doctor you want. You can go to pretty much any hospital you want.
That's true in Canada with their single-payer system.
Well, but you can't go to the private sector. I mean, you're stuck in the public sector. In fact, in Canada, they've effectively banned private hospitals. And so in Canada, you see
But wait,
the
since there is, since everybody's in the same system in Canada, then you have universal choice in Canada because there is no separate private system. Isn't that right?
Well, you've got universal choice as long as you want a government provider. And the government rations care. So in some towns in Canada, they actually hold a lottery and the winners get to see the doctor, like in Norwood, Ontario. That is what happens in a government system. Ultimately, to contain costs, they ration care. You don't see that so much in Medicare today. I think if you expanded it to everyone, very soon government would get into the habit that they've gotten into in every other Western country, which is to ration through waiting or some other type of rationing.
So your book title says, Capitalism Can Cure Health Care. Start to lay it out. What capitalist reforms do you propose, most importantly?
Well, first of all, I think we have to get the diagnosis right. I think American health care is so expensive because it's so terribly cheap. I think whether you're covered in the private sector or you're covered in the public sector, for historical reasons, you pay very little money out of pocket. And as a result, some of the forces we've seen in the other five-sixths of the economy we don't see in health care. What do I mean? For every dollar spent in health care in the United States, only 14 cents comes out of pocket, which is part of the reason we have so little information, so little comparisons. So one of the most basic things I talk about in my book is moving the concept of health insurance back to a more practical definition of insurance. You buy car insurance for accidents, yet health insurance covers you from everything under the sun. Car insurance covered you for things like nicks and cracks to the windshield and covered you for when your tank of gas is running empty. Car insurance would be feverishly expensive, too.
But are you then saying to all these Americans listening who already feel so overburdened by health care costs, we want you to pay more out of pocket under the system you're proposing?
Well, I'm saying that we should move to a smarter system. I like the concept of health savings accounts, which says, look, there are big expenses, and obviously you're not going to be able to shop around. You get hit by a bus, God forbid, and you have to go to the emergency room. We don't want you to think about cost. But for smaller things, your doctor says you have high cholesterol. Should you get a generic? Should you get an on-patent drug? Should you try exercise? On those smaller decisions, you should actually pay out of an account. This should be your health dollars. You should have incentive to shop around. That's the direction I think we should move.
another of Krugman's main points is that most other wealthy nations, which have these much more government-oriented systems, manage to provide almost all their systems with guaranteed health insurance and have longer life expectancies while spending less per person than we do here in the U.S. And he says that points to inefficiencies that are particularly American and that they come from our private sector health insurance economy. What do you say?
I say I used to believe that. I was born and raised in Canada. I trained in Canada. I'm actually still licensed in Canada. And I used to believe government-run healthcare was more compassionate. And I used to cite statistics to my American friends like life expectancy. But the truth is life expectancy, infant mortality, or just that, crude indicators of health. Health, not healthcare. Let me just give you one example of how absurd these things are. Infant mortality in the United States. Okay. Again, I'm not going to do international comparisons. Let's just look at the United States. What do you discover when you do infant mortality in the United States is that Hispanic Americans have infant mortality rates comparable to white Americans, which is far lower than black Americans. But here's the darn thing. Hispanic Americans are the least likely of any of those groups to have health insurance. In fact, it's even more complicated than that because there was a recent JAMA study showing that Hispanic Americans were more likely to have birth outside of hospitals. How does one explain that? Look, infant mortality, like life expectancy, has to do with a complex array of factors, genetics, dietary habits, exercise, lifestyle choices, and healthcare access is just one of them. And in fact, and it pains me to say this as a doctor, probably the least important when you look at life expectancy or infant mortality.
But how could life expectancy not be determined to some degree by the quality of the medical care and the access to the medical care? Look at you pulled out a stat that I don't question, but you could also look at African American life expectancy in this country and see how neatly it lines up with relative lack of access to the healthcare system.
Actually, it seems to line up far more with lifestyle choices and some of the problems we see in the United States that we see far less so in other countries like obesity. When you actually look at those sorts of crude indicators, you're just not looking at how well your healthcare system performs. In contrast, though, I would say once you have a diagnosis, you're still better off being in the United States than you are better off being in any other Western country. I mean, you started this segment by talking to a woman who, the nightmare scenario, is diagnosed with breast cancer. Look at mortality rates. People diagnosed with an illness and who succumb to it. In the United States, about 1 in 4 people diagnosed with breast cancer succumb to it. In Canada, it's much closer to 30%. In France, it's about 35%. In the United Kingdom, it pushes at 45%. When you're diagnosed with an illness, for all of its flaws, you're still better off being in the United States. Single payer sounds great. You get more for less. You live longer. You get access to health care. You pay less. But look, I used to believe in this too. I spent a whole chapter of The Cure, my book, talking about this. It just ain't so.
We have 30 seconds left. Give us a quick reaction from your perspective to the Massachusetts plan, so-called Romney Care under Governor Romney there, where it's universal health care or health insurance, but because anybody who's not covered by their employer or a government program is required as an individual to go out and buy health insurance. Do you like that as a way to get there?
I think there are a lot of good things about Romney Care. One of the things I really like about Romney Care is that they're going to use public money to subsidize people who don't have insurance to make it easier for them to get private insurance. I think there are a lot of problems with Romney Care. I think that there's too much government bureaucracy. They're expanding Medicaid too much. And in 5 years' time, I think that'll come true as being more problematic. But look, I'm interested in state experimentation. I'm excited by what goes on in Massachusetts. I'm excited as well by some of the free market reforms going on in Florida. Let the states experiment. Let's see who comes up with novel ideas.
Dr. David Graetzer, a physician and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. His new book is called The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare, published by Encounter Books. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
30 Issues in 30 Days continues tomorrow with Issue 22, if the Democrats take control of Congress, should they consider impeaching the president? Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
Imagine radio. like you've never heard before.
So the sound triggers the bones disturbs the fluid rocks the hairs.
Yes.
And then the hairs set off essentially electricity?
Yes.
Huh.
Listener support makes new, innovative programming possible. Programs like Radiolab.
That's when you hear something.
It feels to me more like touch. Sound is kind of touch at a distance.
Help make radio that can touch you. Call now with your gift of support to WNYC at 1-888-376-9692. That's 1-888-376-WNYC. Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, along with our assistant program director, Jacqueline Sincotta. And if you've just joined us in the last few minutes, as we've been doing 30 issues in 30 days, issue 21, Is Universal Healthcare Possible in America? With Dr. Graetzer and Paul Krugman, you may not know that we are in the middle of a very special challenge period for WNYC's fall fundraiser. The actor Paul Newman, through his Newman's Own Foundation, has offered WNYC $60,000 of the foundation's money. That's a lot of money for a public radio station, $60,000, but only if we can raise $60,000 from our listeners. This is an all-or-nothing challenge from Paul Newman's foundation, which wants to see that we have meaning in our community, that wants to see that we actually provide an important service to the listeners out there. So he says, yeah, I'll give you $60,000, but only if you can raise $60,000 during the Brian Lehrer Show today, and only during this show, from your listeners. So, folks, if you've ever become a member of WNYC, now is the time to renew. If you've ever considered contributing to WNYC, now is the time to contribute. If you can even make an extra contribution, now is a fabulous time to do that, because it's all going to add up, we hope, to $60,000 this morning, and that will mean another $60,000, all or nothing, from the Newman's Own Foundation. So folks, call us right now, 1-888-376-WNYC, with those tax-deductible contributions, 1-888-376-9692, or do it online at WNYC.org. And Jackie, I say to our listeners, 60,000 thanks.
60,000 thanks. You know, raising the stakes is always what happens when you achieve a goal. You know that the next time around it's going to be higher. But I think what's really important is that Paul Newman is confident that WNYC's listeners will come through. He wants to give us this money, clearly, but he also wants to be sure that the listeners are right there with him in their support of this radio station, of this program, of all the programming you hear. 888-376-9692. You can make a secure e-pledge at WNYC.org, and you will be supporting, among many other things, the 30 Issues in 30 Days series that you've been hearing here on the Brian Lehrer Show. Universal healthcare today. Tomorrow, if the Democrats take Congress, should they investigate or even impeach the president? On Wednesday, is either party weak on terror? On Thursday, is the Pentagon privatizing the war? And on Friday, how to afford a college education? If these aren't issues that affect your life, I'm sure that they are. They affect everybody's lives. It's what's going on in the world. 888-376-9692 or WNYC.org.
Thanks for listening to the Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.